You're listening to Executive Leaders Radio, broadcast from the law offices of Polsinelli in Washington, D.C. This is your host, Herb Cohen, with my co-host, Kristen Jones, Polsinelli, Phil Fagan, Aaron Felix, and Noam Fishman from Polsinelli. And we'd like to give you a rundown of who we have on the air today, including Patrick Samsel, Corporate Counsel, Fors Marsh Group, Jim Van Horn, Vice President, General Counsel, Bluemont, Adam Wegner, General Counsel and Senior Vice President, Corporate Development, Optoro, and finally, Tom Hickey, who is the Chief Legal Officer of Iridium. Let's get to know our first guest, Patrick Samsel, Corporate Counsel, Fors Marsh Group. Patrick, what is Fors Marsh Group? What are you guys doing?
So Fors Marsh Group is a mid-sized market research firm in Arlington, Virginia. We use behavioral science and data science to help our mostly government clients advance their mission deliveries.
Mm-hmm. How large or how small is the organization?
We are about 200 employees and about $45 million.
What do you figure your role is as the, it says you're the corporate counsel of Fors Marsh Group. What's your role on the team?
So my role, I work closely with the ownership and key stakeholders to sort of help them achieve their goals. I am, as the only attorney in a small company, I handle a lot of matters, diverse matters. And
you mentioned earlier when we were speaking in the green room about this thing, this concept of men for others. What's that all about? What are you talking about there?
Yeah, so I went to Gonzaga College High School here in Washington, D.C., and Jesuit school, and men for others was the motto, and that's something that I've carried with me into my adult life, and it's certainly relevant here in my career as well.
Wait. What is it, and why is it relevant here in your career, especially considering your corporate counsel?
So, yeah. So, I mean, it's a simple phrase, men for others, right? It's the idea of servant leadership, right? It's the idea of, we are here to help each other. We are here to help others. And that's...
What? Wait a minute. It says here you're the corporate counsel for Fors Marsh Group. Tell me how that all works together.
So, I think it's the idea that it's not about me. It's about, there's something greater than myself. And in the corporate context, I'm helping, I'm helping the company achieve its goals.
Mm-hmm. Aaron, did you have a question?
What was your activities when you were middle school, high school? What type of things were you involved in?
So I was a swimmer. I was a Boy Scout. And then I was a car washer, lawn mower, driveway shoveler, whatever it was.
It sounds like you had a diversity of interests.
I sure did. I had a diversity of activities, certainly. Although a lot of it, you know, again, I spent a lot of time in the pool.
How's that diversity of interest showing up in your gig?
Well, it certainly defines what I do. I while I'm a government contracts lawyer at heart, I enjoy the challenge of handling employment law issues, commercial leases, corporate governance, whatever mm-hmm. comes through my
just
door.
Like you had a lot of interest as a kid. You do that. You do a variety of things in your role as counsel nowadays. Philip?
Yeah, you mentioned you were a Boy Scout, and we were talking earlier, you actually were an Eagle Scout.
An Eagle Scout.
I'm sorry. So you obviously are very proud of that. How does achieving that status at such a young age help you in what you're doing today and what you learned from that?
Yeah, so becoming an Eagle Scout involves there's vision, right? It is the end of the road. You know that. And there are day-to-day steps that you take in order to get there. And so I think that I think about that in my career. I mean, I'm still there's still a lot to aspire to, and it's about sort of working towards that every day.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, does being an Eagle Scout have a leadership quality to it, or is it more of an independent?
Yeah, didn't somebody give you a pin at one point in time?
Yeah.
What was that all about?
So first, you know, just in quick answer to the question, I mean, yes, it's certainly a there are absolutely leadership aspects becoming an Eagle Scout. And then to answer the second question, so we were at a jamboree at West Point up in New York, and it was, you know, the saying, if it ain't raining, it ain't training. Cold, rainy, muddy kind of weekend, and there was an obstacle course, and I don't remember much, but I remember crawling through mud, and I remember being handed a class pin by one of the
Why? By one of the cadets?
Yeah, by one of the...
Why did he give you the class pin? Why did he give you his pin?
Because my performance had inspired him.
What about your performance?
Well, again, I mean, you're talking about being probably 14 years old.
You're not tooting your own horn. You led a bunch of other kids through some difficult circumstances, didn't you?
Yeah.
That was that thing about men for others, wasn't it, at age 14?
I think so. I mean,
Noam, what's your question?
Well, you painted a vivid picture of your family life before to us. Why don't you tell the listeners, you know, about mom and dad and brother and sister?
Sure. So, so it's mom and dad, brother and sister. My dad is an executive at a smaller government contracts logistics company up in Frederick, Maryland. My mother was stay at home. My brother, I have a younger brother. He's 3 years younger than me, and my sister is 3 years younger than him.
So tell us what your dinner table was like back when you were 8 and 9 years old. What were you talking about?
I remember talking about our days. I remember being the oldest. Obviously, you know, I was sort of coming online before my brother and sister, sort of thing. And so I remember having conversations that were... I was the first to be asking questions.
What kind of questions were you asking?
You know,
What were you thinking about back then?
Well,
let me ask you more directly. What effect does faith have on your being?
So, you know, for a kid who spent 8 years in Catholic schooling, you know, I certainly have faith at my foundation. Although I do separate it somewhat from religion.
What's the difference between faith and religion?
So I like to think of faith as the answers to the unknown answers, right?
And religion?
And religion are sort of the rules that human beings have constructed around.
Isn't religion like law then?
In many ways.
Mm-hmm.
You know, again, I think that obviously, you know, law is a rules-based system, and my approach to faith and religion has sort of colored my approach to rules-based systems, where it's not only about sort of understanding or operating within them, but shaping them as well.
Ah, Kristen?
Well, it sounds like you have a very creative and adaptive thought process. How do you use that in your job as a corporate counsel at Fors Marsh?
Yeah, so like growing up, I am the first person to do a lot of things in my professional career, at least within the context of my company. So it's about understanding the challenges, establishing good systems, and testing them. You know, sort of, I guess the modern buzzword is not being afraid to fail, but the idea that we're I'm the first one to be there.
Noam, what's your question?
What is the earliest memory you have of realizing that you think differently than other people?
I was telling a story earlier about in college I was essentially a brain science, neurobiology major, and there are scientific aspects of that, like, you know, how do you measure the ions passing over cell membranes, and what is that? You know, that there's sort of an objectivity to that. But what I always enjoyed about brain science was sort of answering the question about, you know, somewhere between us as human beings being sort of ongoing chemical reactions and then being individual human beings. There's something in there, and brain science was always an interesting way to get into that because, again, like there are sort of there's science on both ends, right? Whether it's sort of psychology on the one end or
Patrick,
chemistry.
Patrick, how does your out-of-the-box thinking aid your role as corporate counsel for the Fors Marsh Group?
Yeah, so I hope I'm of value, right? I like to sort of draw on a lot of experiences in order to answer the questions that are asked of me,
So there's no black and white. You're always constantly looking at what's the best way of doing things, what's the right answer.
Yeah, there are no new problems, right? And I mean that in the sense that
what was your favorite subject in school?
I was always a science kid.
Why?
I don't know. I think there was a there's certainly an evidence-based reasoning element
to it. Is there a connection between your interest in school and what you're doing for a living now?
I think so.
What is it?
Well, I've always followed my curiosity. So that you know, to finish the story that I was saying earlier, mm-hmm. I mean that's why I studied what I did in college. And
how many what time do you start with your email in the morning? What time do you stop with your email at night?
As early as possible.
And what time do you stop at night?
As early as possible.
So you work long hours. Do you work on the weekends also?
Does
it feel like work?
Not always.
Why?
The shortest answer is I enjoy what I do.
Yeah, there it is. What's the website address for this group, for this organization known as the Fors Marsh Group?
Yeah, so it's F-O-R-S, ForsMarshGroup.com.
Let me add that one more time.
ForsMarshGroup.com.
We've been speaking with Patrick Samsel, Corporate Counsel, Fors Marsh Group, here on Executive Leaders Radio. Don't forget to visit our website, executiveleadersradio.com. To learn more about our executive leaders, we'll be back in a moment right after this break.
Nice interview.
We're back. You're listening to Executive Leaders Radio. This is your host, Herb Cohen. I'd like to introduce Jim Van Horn, Vice President, General Counsel of Bluemont. Jim, what is Bluemont? What are you guys doing?
Yeah, Bluemont is a global not-for-profit organization and government contractor that executes projects in some of the most challenging environments in the world.
Like what kind of projects and where?
So Bluemont executes humanitarian assistance projects, stabilization, as well as some infrastructure projects. And again, it's in some of the most challenging places. Currently, we're one of the preeminent providers in and around the Syrian conflict.
Mm-hmm. How large or how small is the organization?
The organization has about 1,000 employees, and we're around $100 million in revenue. Mm-hmm.
Where are you from originally?
I'm from Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania.
How many brothers and sisters?
One older brother, one younger sister.
So you're the middle of three. All right, Philip?
Yeah, tell us about the sports you've played growing up, and in particular your hockey career.
Sure. So I played some baseball and soccer, but very quickly hockey rose to the top, and that sort of dominated my childhood.
Yeah, what position did you play?
I played goaltender.
So hockey goaltending, the rest of the team leaves the goaltender alone and makes them figure it out and use your goaltending expertise. Tell us about how that plays into your role as counsel at the company today.
Yeah, sure. And I'm not sure if they leave them alone because they're odd or they leave them alone because they don't want to jinx them. I do draw a lot of parallels. I think that you find as a young athlete playing, especially playing at that position, that there's a lot of pressure. And, you know, you're at the end of a game and it's a one-goal game and your entire team is looking to you and counting on you. So you really do learn you have to control your emotions. You have to control yourself physically. And that's something that I think about, you know, day to day when dealing with crises at work. You have to be able to control your emotions and kind of keep that cool.
Do folks count on you in crisis time? Do you find that they're leaning on you?
They do. I mean, I think that it is the role of the general counsel, and I think that a general counsel who's too emotional or gets too emotionally involved, it could cloud decision making. It could feed into other emotional people in the company. So I think that is the role, is to be as objective and as even keeled as possible.
Jim, you mentioned that you were the middle child. Is that right?
I am.
And how much older is your brother?
He's 2 years older.
And did you mention you have a sister?
I do.
How much younger is your sister?
She was 5 years younger.
There's a big spread there. What skills did you learn being the middle child in between an older brother and younger sister?
Sure. I think it's kind of the swivel chair mentality where, you're dealing with, you're dealing with somebody who's older and more authoritarian in the house, and then you can kind of swivel chair. You have to deal with your younger sibling, who you have to take a different approach. So, understanding those dynamics within the household, that is a skill that you use every day in the general counsel seat, and that you're dealing with management and a board, and then you also have to deal with direct reports and there are a lot of similarities in that.
And besides just the dynamics of swivel chairing, what else is it about being a middle child that affects your decision making and how you affect getting things done.
I think most either middle children or at least younger siblings can probably relate that, you know, you learn at a very early age that you don't have the luxury of the older sibling who gets to take everything by brute force. You have to kind of come up with some innovative ways to get what you want, and I think that includes negotiated settlement.
Kristen?
You mentioned earlier that you're a dad of four boys. How is being a dad related to being a general counsel at Bluemont?
Yeah, four boys need a lot of counsel and advice and some mentoring. And so I think that there are some similarities there in that you have, you have somebody that you want to, four that you want to be a role model for. And you want to kind of guide them and help them make the correct decisions. I think that's exactly what you're doing as a general counsel.
Wait. I read in the newspaper that business is blood and guts and everybody's suing everybody. If you don't do your job, you just fire them. You're telling me that you feel about the folks that you work with the same way you feel about your kids, which is you're trying to support them and mentor them. You're not trying to tear them apart and fire them?
Correct, as well as provide guidance and counsel. As attorneys, we have a specialized skill and a specialized knowledge, and it's our job to make sure that we're providing that. I think that is similar, and in a lot of other ways, it's you want to come off as a role model. You want to come off as somebody who's ethical, as somebody who
Well, this is especially interesting, not only because you're part of the executive team in the business, but because you're corporate counsel. And I thought corporate counsel, all they do is sue everybody all the time. And you're talking about building the team and mentoring people and treating people like you treat your four sons. That's sort of interesting to me.
Sure. I think that is the modern day corporate counsel. Is you have to understand your business. You have to understand your role within the business. You have to understand, the industry, because, the business is constantly in an environment where it's taking risks. And, they look to counsel to kind of help navigate through.
You have to understand the business?
Absolutely.
Why do you have to bother understanding the business? I mean, you just have to understand the law.
So it's applying the law and addressing the risk within the context of the business. The old analogy that a ship is safest when it's at harbor, but that's not what it's designed to do. You use that analogy in business all the time. I mean, you're taking risks with every contract that you sign and execute. You got to know, does management understand the context of how risky this is?
Wait a minute. So you're telling me not only do you have to be aware of where the business is at, you've got to be involved with the strategic planning of the business, figuring out where it's going to go?
Absolutely. And that's why I think that so many general counsel are also vice presidents and part of the executive management team. You're helping make those decisions as part of that team.
I never realized that corporate counsel was so integrated into the executive team and so involved with pulling the team together, as opposed to what I read in the newspapers about suing everybody and ripping it apart. Noam, what's your next question?
You've described a very introspective approach to your role. Can you, going back to your childhood, what was your dad like?
I see a lot of similarities. He was a very pensive and even-keeled person. You didn't see him get very emotional. You never saw him, get too riled up. And I see that in myself. I mean, I think that that I have his personality. And then, on a personal side, I mean, I think that as a family man, that's kind of where I learned how to be a dad and kind of be selfless and trying to give your children everything and as much, as good of a childhood and upbringing as you can.
What do you do outside of work and outside of being a dad?
I still actually play a lot of hockey.
Huh. And what's your role on that hockey team?
It is still a form of goaltending. It's not what it used to be, but it's somewhat for myself too, just to get some exercise.
And what's goaltending have to do with being corporate counsel?
Again, I mean, I think it's that having a specialized position that the entire team is counting on you to be able to execute. You're part of a team, but in a lot of ways, they can't help you. That's similar to being corporate counsel. You're part of a team, but you're the one that's providing legal counsel.
Wow, you don't mind being in the heat, do you? Boy, the goaltender. What's the website address of this organization known as Bluemont?
Bluemont is bluemont.org.
How do you spell that?
B-L-U-M-O-N-T.
.org. We've been speaking with Jim Van Horn, Vice President and General Counsel of Bluemont, here on Executive Leaders Radio with my co-hosts Phil Fagan, Kristen Jones, Aaron Felix, and Noam Fishman from the law firm of Polsonelli. Don't forget to visit our website, executiveleadersradio.com. To learn more about our executive leaders, we'll be back in a moment right after this break. Nice interview. We're back. You're listening to Executive Leaders Radio. This is your host, Herb Cohen. We'd like to introduce Adam Wegner, who is the General Counsel and Senior Vice President Corporate Development for an organization known as Optoro. Adam, what is Optoro? What are you guys doing?
Good question. Optoro is a decision-making platform that provides services to handle the returns and excess items for retailers.
Are these online retailers? Are these physical world retailers?
The short answer is both. As more and more is moving online, obviously, that's a key focus of what we're doing. You know, a lot of consumers go out, they buy several things, they decide they only want to keep a couple, they return them, and all of a sudden you have to figure out what do you do with those items.
That's interesting. So you tend to keep the big picture in mind. That's the sense that I get of you. How young were you when you began understanding everything?
I don't know, 6, 7, 8 years old.
What was going on? What happened?
My parents were divorced. My mom worked full-time. I found myself with a lot of free times, often unsupervised in the afternoons, not really watching a lot of TV, so playing with things. I love my Erector set, just putting things together, being creative, figuring them out.
So you were, because you had time, you were playing with your Erector set, putting it together, taking it apart, figuring out how things work. Your curiosity was at play. Interesting. Philip?
Yeah, you also had a mind for business early on. Tell us about the unique paper route. Where did you deliver papers?
Sure. I grew up on Capitol Hill, so native Washingtonian. And from the earliest age, I really appreciated having a few pennies in my pocket to be able to buy candy and sodas and things like that. I was fortunate enough to get the one of the Plum paper routes, delivering afternoon papers, the old Evening Star in the Senate office buildings. While there, I discovered that they had a commissary that sold various items, including some office supplies, and they were heavily discounted. And at the time, these pens were very much in fashion and in demand. And I could buy pens there for about 25 cents, where they were listing for 75 cents, and I would take them to school and sell them for 50 cents. So it was sort of win-win. I'd have a nice profit, and the kids would get them at a discount.
So you're making a markup on items you were obtaining. An unbelievable head for business. How do you take that to today now?
I think I look for opportunities like that in everything I'm doing. I have been in-house as general counsel now for 20 years for several companies, and always companies that are growing very, very fast and playing offense.
Right. So, but in-house is legal, right? Not business.
In-house legal is business.
Explain.
You have to obviously you have a seat at the table because of your legal expertise, but you very much are applying legal information and risk assessment to trying to solve business opportunities for the company.
Interesting. Kristen, what are you thinking?
Who was a great influencer on your life when you were younger?
I think one of my greatest ones was my high school social studies teacher.
And why is that?
I took this course called The World Since 1945 back in the early 80s, which my dad made fun of me for saying, what, there was no world before 1945. But we would focus on the teacher would focus on several big issues. One was the Cuban Missile Crisis and really getting into the complexities of how countries work together and how individual leaders can influence things and their personalities can force them to act in certain ways was truly fascinating and inspirational.
And how do you think that your personality and decision-making skills influence your company?
I try to bring out the best in everyone I work with. I'm a stickler for details, but at the same time, inspiring people to be creative. It's an interesting little combination.
When you mentioned your social studies teacher, that's how all these different countries did or didn't work together. How these large institutions and people didn't. Was there stuff you learned then that helps you run the business now?
Absolutely. I think that appreciating the big picture is fundamental to understanding the specific issue that you're dealing with, because everything is within context. If you can't understand how it helps the big picture or hurts the big picture, you really can't provide a good solution.
Mm-hmm. Noam, what are you thinking?
I'm thinking you approach business today a lot like you approached your erector set back when you're 8 years old. Do you see the parallels there? How does that work?
I do in many ways. It's interesting. I haven't really thought about that in a while. On the erector sets, you have a set of tools to work with, and there's certain instructions on how to put things together. What I like to do was follow those, but then step back and say, how can I improve on those or try to create something unique, whether it's some little crane or some electromagnet type thing. A lot of interesting creative approach, but applying a set of rules to it.
Erin?
Adam, you mentioned that earlier when we were talking that you were a latchkey kid. What was that like, being a latchkey kid growing up?
It was the 70s, so I had some friends who were latchkey kids as well, and I think it forces you to be very independent from an early age. I got into cooking because I was hungry. it was necessity is the mother of invention, and I've kept that to this day, and I think you really got to solve problems to get what you want. You can't rely on others.
Yeah, developing that level of independence and responsibility at that age can have a lasting effect. How does that sort of responsibility nature and independence that you had to develop at that age affect how you look at your career and your job today?
I think that you realize that change happens and you have to be in front of it. And you have to plan for change and then embrace it as it occurs. I've seen that from an early age. I mean, when I joined a law firm a year and a half after I was there, I assumed I'd be there for a long time. A year and a half after I was there, the senior partner who ran the group I was in had me come into his office, sat me down, closed the door, and said, "I'm leaving the firm. All the clients that you're working on are leaving the firm. But I think if you call this number, there's an offer for you at another law firm." And that was a huge surprise. It turned out to be absolutely fine, but it was, whoa, things can change overnight.
Mm-hmm. Adam, do you think you'd be the same person you are today if Mom and Dad had not gotten divorced?
It's a nature versus nurture kind of question. I really don't know. I think I probably would. It's a good question. I probably would be the same, maybe.
How do you think that affected you? I mean, sure, it was difficult at that time. How do you think that that's had a positive effect on you and your career?
I think it forced me to be. I've always been very curious, so I don't think that would ever have changed with circumstances. But I think I had to basically handle that curiosity and solve things for myself because of my situation, whereas maybe if I were in a different situation, I could have had other assistance or supervision, solving or providing things for me that I didn't have.
Adam, you've described a couple of situations where the your circumstances changed very abruptly. How do you think that those experiences affect the decisions that you make or how you go about making the decisions that you make day to day?
I think you go in with your eyes wide open and you plan for something that could change. So while you develop a plan with other team members and you pursue it, you recognize that there are things that could influence that and change it, and you better have a backup plan or a plan B and be ready, be nimble and ready to adapt.
It's interesting. I'm reading here that it says you're general counsel and senior vice president corporate development of Optoro, and what I read in the newspapers is that, business is all about money, 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 but it doesn't feel to me like money is your key driver. Am I mistaken about that?
I like being able to have good food on the table, but no, money I don't think is my key driver. I'm all about building things and improving things and really working with companies that are trying to create a new solution, new or better solution to solve a huge problem in the world. It's what I've really been doing, ever since I went in-house. And
how important are relationships to you?
Close relationships are very important. I'm not too into superficial relationships.
What do you mean close relationships are important? Tell us a little bit more about what you're thinking there.
Knowing people very well, which I think for me has resulted in a sort of a smaller group of entrusted folks. I think that's paralleled in my professional career and working with a small management team.
You just used the word entrusted folks, and I don't hear that typically in business. Entrusted folks. What are you talking about?
Hopefully you should hear it, I would hope. I mean, I think that successful companies, successful teams, trust each other and trust each other both to play their role and to provide a great support for the others and bring out the best in each other.
That's interesting. So you enjoy the interdependence amongst teammates that are well chosen and where you can really depend on each other and trust each other.
Absolutely. And as part of that, fundamentally, communication is key, and making sure people are aware of the same thing. They may not always agree. They may have very spirited debates. I was in a strategic planning session earlier today where it was a very spirited debate on the topic. But at the end of the day, we're all solving for it, and we all agreed to move forward in the same direction.
Interesting. What's the website address for this organization known as Optoro?
It is optoro.com. That's OPTORO.com.
We've been speaking with Adam Wegner, General Counsel and Senior Vice President of Corporate Development for Optoro, with my co-hosts Phil Fagan, Kristen Jones, Aaron Felix, and Noam Fishman from the law firm of Polsinelli. This is Herb Cohen. Don't forget to visit our website, executiveleadersradio.com. Learn more about our executive leaders. We'll be back in a moment right after this quick break.
Yeah.
We're back. You're listening to Executive Leaders Radio. This is your host, Herb Cohen. We'd like to introduce Tom Hickey, who is the chief legal officer of an organization known as Iridium. Tom, what is Iridium? What are you guys doing?
Iridium is a satellite communications company that provides radio, voice and data communications to the entire planet.
And I understand you're the only organization that does this.
That's right. We have a system of 66 satellites that are cross-linked across the sky. That not only do we have a system like that, we're actually replacing it now with a tech upgrade and putting up new satellites as well.
And how large or how small is this organization?
We have about 500 employees. Mm-hmm. Our revenues are roughly $450 million a year.
Where are you from originally?
I grew up in Milwaukee.
How many brothers and sisters?
I'm the oldest of three.
And what was going on with you when you were 8 years old?
Well, I think I got interested in the space program very early. I remember following the Apollo program. I remember first one I remember was Apollo 8. It was going around the moon, first one to leave the Earth's orbit. And I remember thinking, they're not even going to land on the moon, and why can't they do more than that?
Wait. Now, most of us, when we were watching rockets launch, were like amazed. What was going through your mind?
It was very cool to watch, but I thought, can it really be that now we haven't had a man on the moon yet or a person on the moon, and can't we be going to beyond that to other planets? And
so you had a fascination with what's next in space as a young boy, at 8 years old, and you hadn't studied it or anything. It was just a fascination, huh? It was just intuitive with you.
It was just a hobby. My friends were interested in space as well, and it was just the technology is really cool, and I wanted to learn more about it and see how far it could go.
Mm-hmm. Noah?
Tom, when you weren't thinking about space back then, what were you doing? What were you playing?
Probably like other kids that age, I was playing sports and a sports fan, so played basketball, played tennis, ran track.
And if you could rank them for us, what were your favorite sports?
Basketball was by far my favorite. There were some really strong Milwaukee teams at the time, but I'd say track after that and then tennis.
And so if basketball's first, if you could tell us why, what was it about basketball that really drew you?
Just an exciting game, a lot of things to think about both on offense and defense, and I love the team interaction.
And so describe yourself as a player. What were your attributes?
I was not the star player, but I think I was always there to make sure that there were I was rebounding or I was playing defense or I was shooting wherever I could.
Mm-hmm. All right. Kristen, what are you thinking?
You talked a little bit about a family member who had influenced you in your life. Who is that, and how did they influence you?
Well, probably a couple family members outside my immediate family. I had an uncle who was an orthopedic surgeon who seemed like a really good problem solver. I learned a lot from him, and I had an aunt who was a local television celebrity, and so I loved learning about the technology of television and getting a peek behind the scenes there.
So how did she influence, how do you think that influenced you and affected your career?
I think I liked the technology of television and later got me interested in wireless communications and satellite communications.
So you're telling me that you rubbed up against a bunch of people as you were younger and you just took the best of each one of them and made yourself.
Well, I tried.
Uh-huh.
I tried.
Yeah, it sounds like, you know, this fascination at age 8 with what's going on up there. And then, for example, what happened with your godmother, where she was involved in the world of media. And, you know, you're launching satellites. There's a pretty clear connection there. All right, Aaron, what are you thinking?
Tom, you mentioned that you were the oldest. You are the oldest of three. What are the brothers, sisters? What's the age differences?
I am the oldest of three. I have a sister who's about a little over 2 years younger than I am, and a brother who's about 2-3 years younger than she is.
Okay, so about a 5-year age gap in total between you and your youngest.
Exactly.
So what was your role as the oldest child?
Babysitter, leader. But, you know, we had a great time playing together as well. But I was probably the designated parent when the parents weren't there.
Was that imposed on you, or did you create that role for yourself?
You know, it's a good question. Probably asked to take a leadership role, but I think I felt pretty natural at it, and I enjoyed it.
Felt pretty natural at what?
At being responsible for the group. To the extent that, you know, at
you
the time, my brother was 5 years younger and probably not, needed a little bit of supervision at the time.
Is that how you feel about being the chief legal officer at Iridium?
I think that being responsible is part of it. I'd say today it's more of a team effort than a supervisory effort, mm-hmm. because we really need to harness the power of our collective mind at work. But I think, yeah, clearly being responsible and helping lead the team is maybe did carry over to today.
Mm-hmm. And at what age did you start becoming the surrogate parent or a substitute parent?
Well, I'm not sure I go that far, but I'd say that I think that I got interested in student government in high school, and I liked being able to look at ways to, you know, change things for the better if I could.
And how would you characterize your leadership style?
Hopefully inclusive, but hopefully also thinking about not just problem solving, but how do we think about what the next problem is to come and solve it before it
Phillip,
happens.
What are you thinking?
Yeah, we're talking about leadership, and how many people do you have in the general counsel's office?
We have 20, but we cover, you know, contracts, procurement, security, governance, regulatory, a lot of different functions.
And do you... you enjoy that leadership role versus the counseling role?
I like counseling the best, probably more than the administrative part. But I like the leadership part of thinking about what are we on a policy basis or a prioritization basis, or connecting the dots across the functions to make sure we're not missing something.
Where does the counseling come from? How do you tie it back into your childhood and the counseling aspect?
Well, I think counseling is kind of problem solving, maybe. So it's a little bit of looking at, again, it's probably a lot easier to prevent the vase from being knocked over in the first place than having to explain to my parents why it was broken.
Tom, what's the website address for this organization known as Iridium?
It's iridium.com. That's iridium.com.
We've been speaking with Tom Hickey, Chief Legal Officer of Iridium, as well as we've had the opportunity of speaking with Patrick Samsel, Corporate Counsel of Fors Marsh Group, then Jim Van Horn, Vice President General Counsel of Bluemont, Adam Wegner, General Counsel and Senior Vice President Corporate Development of Optoro, and again, most recently, Tom Hickey, Chief Legal Officer of Iridium. I'd like to thank my co-hosts, Phil Fagan, Kristen Jones, Aaron Felix, and Noam Fishman from the law firm of Polsinelli for giving me a hand structuring the questions. Hope you're providing our listening audience an educational and entertaining show. What is the website address for this law firm, Polsinelli?
It's polsinelli.com.
How do you spell that?
polsinelli.com.
And don't forget to visit our website, executiveleadersradio.com, to learn more about our executive leaders. That's executiveleadersradio.com. To learn more about our executive leaders, thank you for joining us today. If you hadn't joined us, we wouldn't have a radio show, and we hope you provided an educational and an entertaining show. Thank you for joining us, and have a nice day. Bye-bye.
Oh, we nailed that one.